Hi, this is Jim Kelly. Welcome back to the Free Reads podcast and my novel, Look Into the Sun. In part four, Philip Wing has a little chat with his patron, Solon Petropolis, and the net that the mysterious Nadabu is weaving closes a little bit tighter. This episode is shorter than the previous ones, mostly because my plate is pretty full these days. Many of you have had troubles downloading Free Reads. My understanding is that iTunes in particular has been cutting these episodes off. I think I have traced the problem to my hosting service. You see, there are so many of you that Free Reads is now eating bandwidth like a black hole eats stars. My website designers have convinced me to move to a more reliable and costly provider. So, not only will there be a new and very spiffy Jim Kelly website in a few weeks, but I'm hoping the move will put an end to my iTunes blues. But switching providers is no easy task. Although we hope to do the switchover on a weekend when traffic is lower, I'm warning you now that it may look like jimkelly.net and the Free Reads podcast has gone dark for a day or two. And when I come back online, some of you who have linked to various pages on my site will have to relink. For all these inconveniences, I apologize. I'm a victim of my own success. In any event, this is still a few weeks away. In the meantime, we'll all just have to limp along with the old site. As always, I'm releasing this under a Creative Commons license. Now that I'm going to be paying more for bandwidth, I suppose I should harp on the old PayPal ask. If you like what you hear, drop a little something, blah, blah, blah. But I still think signing up for James Patrick Kelly's StoryPod over on audible.com would be better for both of us. I would say that the average amount people have been leaving me in PayPal is just under 10 bucks. While paying 17 bucks to Audible will get you, basically, an entire hardcover book's worth of short stories. Audible seems pretty excited about StoryPod. They've got me at the very top of their podcast page, wedged between some of their most popular podcasters like the Car Talk Guys and Garrison Keillor and Susie Bright, the widest read, reviled, and revered sex expert in America. Oh, and by the way, if any of you are StoryPod subscribers, how about leaving some customer reviews? Go ahead, tell me how I'm really doing. I'm tough. I can take it. Okay, chit-chat over. Time for the reading. Look Into the Sun, Part 4. It was the dolly who made him keep the appointment. He had wanted to try it again with her, because as long as he kept trying, he would not have to think about what he had done. But she was finished with him. "Come on, Philly, show's over." She sat up in the mat and snagged her discarded isothermals with her foot. Her surgically perfected breasts dangled as she bent over, and Wing felt another surge of desire. He ran a finger down her vertebrae. She reached behind her back and caught his hand with a grip that hurt. "Enough!" He propped himself up on an elbow so that he could see her expression. If he could have seen some sign of tenderness, or better, regret, he might have been able to forgive himself. But her face was as hard as a sidewalk, and he realized she was glaring at him the way he had intended to glare at her while they were making love. "You look like a damned puppy," she said. He stayed on the bed while she finished dressing and repacked her kit. "I'll leave my number at the desk," she said as she thumbed the hatch lock. "Some boys like to order copies of the vid." Wing closed his eyes. All he wanted now was for her to go. "You got 20 minutes before your ride shows." Wing said nothing. He did not open his eyes again until the hatch slid shut. Petropolis's chauffeur did not look either like Cary Grant or Queen Victoria. She was an androgynously handsome young woman who would have been totally unremarkable had she not been driving a car. Petropolis's Mercedes was the only private vehicle on the T-way at 3:45 in the morning. They passed a container train, a few trucks, some short-haul vans, and a stream of red, white, and blue buses filled with the usual cast of stolid shift workers and twisted kids. Wing envied them their flattened contentment. They got off in Greenwich, a city masquerading as a town. By that pretense, it had managed to escape the worst of the cancerous urban sprawl which had engulfed its neighbors. Although the heart of Greenwich was just as empty as that of Stamford, it was smaller, and its architectural blunders had been less egregious. The Mercedes passed quickly through a neighborhood of shabby go-tube parks. The farther from the T-way they went, the more attractive the real estate, until at last they entered a section where zoning and great wealth had preserved a way of life unchanged from the era of consumption. On either side of the country road were walled estates with long driveways that led to houses built of fieldstone and brick and real wood. They turned, and the chauffeur tapped recognition code. Wrought iron gates squealed open. Wing saw two sentry spiders converging on the car out of the darkness, their ovoid bodies bristling with sensors and weaponry. He could not help but wonder what the Dolly would have thought of this yard. Escorted by the robots, the chauffeur eased the car up the driveway toward a mansion that made Piscataqua House look like a shed. "Go right in," said the chauffeur. "He's waiting." The library was blood hot. Books climbed two walls to the ceiling, a circular wrought iron stair, and two balconies provided access. Another wall was a three-story pane of optical plastic with a view of a black pond surrounded by a shadowy, formal garden. The last wall, most of the floor space, and even some of the ceiling, was given over to objet d'art. Wing hesitated to call it a collection. It was more a hoard. A Raphael Virgin hung uneasily beside a Santiago grid. A Yoshitoshi ghoul glared at a Hopper gas station. On either side of the doorway, a seated stone Buddha grinned serenely at a scowling Tinglet totem pole. A Caldermobile hung motionlessly in the stuffy air. Floating on not quite invisible wires in a corner was a miniature glass cloud. "Mr. Petropolis," said Wing. "Hello." The silence was as oppressive as the heat. He picked his way through the clutter toward the desk. To one side was a glass case containing a scale model of Data Delphi, the first of Petropolis's seven wonders to be completed. On the other side of the desk was what looked like a refrigerator, an incongruous humming white enamel box, 2 meters by a meter. "Sir?" Wing could feel sweat dribble from his armpit. His hair was already damp. "Is anyone here?" He leaned over the Delphi model and brushed his sleeve across the glass case. It came away gray with dust, and he sneezed. "You're not sick, are you?" With a whine, the refrigerator rotated toward him, revealing an ashen body plugged into its opposite side. "Mr. Petropolis," Wing had to sneeze again. "You are sick." Petropolis had the reedy voice of a 12-year-old. "Sick." "It's the dust." "At least keep your mouth shut." Petropolis squirmed. "I'll be right with you. I'm filtering." Wing found it impossible not to stare, and indeed, he quickly realized that Petropolis took a kind of perverse pleasure from the effect of his grotesque appearance. He was a little man, probably weighed less than 50 kilos. He was naked, completely hairless. His skin was the color of spilled milk, so translucent that in places Wing could see pulsing blue and red cords beneath it. He was connected to the machine by IV collars at the neck, wrists, and ankles, a bladder catheter, and an array of skull plugs and sensors. He did not look like one of the world's oldest humans. He did not look human at all, but rather like a botched waxwork. "You've been to Delphi?" said Petropolis. Wing blinked. "No." Sweat ran into his eyes. "I've seen vids." "Strip, if you're hot." When Wing hesitated, Petropolis insisted, "Come, at least a jacket. When people faint, I lose time. You should travel more, you know. Vids lie. No substitute for being there. That's what Seven Wonders is all about. Can't believe anything you see on a screen." Wing laid his jacket on the desk. "No." "So what would you ask if you won the lottery at Delphi?" "One free query. Every database in the World Information Net at your disposal." Wing's shirt was drenched, and he was having trouble breathing the thick air. "Why am I here?" "Not teleology." Petropolis' eyes rolled. "A waste of expensive computer time."
You wanted to talk about the glass cloud?"
No, that's over with now. Seven Wonders and all that. Obsolete. New data has come in. If I don't have to die, why build fancy tombstones?"
"What do you mean, obsolete?" The heat was making Wing dizzy. "The cloud is finished. The dedication is in May."
"Maybe," he frowned. "Been hearing bad things from the Foundation. What's that man's name? Porter? Projections about the operating budget."
Wing wondered what would happen if he pried the old man off his life support system. He imagined Petropolis flopping on the hot floor like a fish. "The messengers have picked up most of the overruns."
"Messengers?"
Petropolis sighed.
"Exactly. That's what I'd ask if I were you. Why did the messengers care about Philip Wing?"
Wing sank into the chair behind Petropolis' desk and loosened his collar. He felt as though he might melt. "Do they?" The old man began to talk in his odd, rambling way, as if it did not matter whether anyone was listening.
"Another question. Who discovered you? A? Did they become interested after the Foundation chose your bubble?" "So it would appear. But they are subtle. Subtle. I've gone over the files on your selection process. Not sure I understand them anymore. It was just after the messengers made first contact. Everything was still a big secret. The screening committee were all professionals. Credentials as long as their faces. Serious, very serious, and unimpeachable, or there would have been hell to pay. No names on the submissions. And even so, how could they have known who you were? You were nobody. But consider. All seven are now messenger disciples. Three have actually given up their careers to live in missions. Shows a lack of imagination on your part that you know nothing of this. You, wake up! They're interfering with your life. Don't you care?"
No. Before the dolly, Wing might have been able to summon up the expected indignation. Now he felt nothing but a limp impatience with this strange creature buzzing at him like some garrulous mosquito. "Your life, too. You approved."
"Troubling, isn't it? Very troubling. Although I relied heavily on the selection process. I must say that I found your bubble charming in its extravagance. Not as clever, really, as Delphi. Perhaps a little silly. Still, just the sort of thing to turn out the crowds. You are listening. Don't faint on me."
"I want something to drink." Wing touched his finger on the desk monitor to activate it. When nothing happened, he wrote D in the dust on the screen and then smeared it. "You ought to have this room cleaned. It's disgusting." Petropolis looked around, seemingly surprised.
"Perhaps. Yes, it is. It's the help, you know. I don't like having them in the room, or anyone. Just me."
Wing was repulsed. The man was beyond mere vanity. He was using his wealth and power to create the illusion for himself that no other individual in the world existed but Solon Petropolis. Only a rich man could afford to be so utterly crazy without being locked up. Petropolis chattered on, oblivious to the fact that Wing was not paying attention.
"I've been manipulated. Perhaps. But I'll twist it to my advantage. You watch."
All that needs to be done is to satisfy this messenger, Nadavu. I do a favor for him, he owes me. Delivering you is the favor. Understand?
Again, Nadavu. I guess I do. Wing wondered what it would take to get Nadavu to leave him alone. But I'm not interested.
I don't believe it!
Patroclus looked like a solipsist who had just heard the sound of someone breaking furniture in the next room.
You don't even know what he wants.
Wing shrugged.
You don't realize the stakes!
There was a satisfying quaver in Patroclus's voice. Wing stood.
Immortality!
Patroclus was crumbling before him. Wing knew from his own experience how fragile illusions could be.
They could do it! I won't be tied to this machine anymore, and I'll never die. Never!
So what?
So, I'll give you commissions. You can do the rest of the wonders. Immortality, too. I'll make them give it to you. I'll find a way. I promise.
Patroclus' skin was pink. His chest heaved.
You want something else? What? All you have to do is visit him. He told me that's all he wants. A little chat. Tell me what you want.
You haven't got it.
Wing picked up his jacket.
I'll junk your silly bubble!
Patroclus twisted against the IV collars, trying to get Wing to look at him.
You hear? Well, sue! They'll never work again! And even if you do, no one will dare write your insurance! Wait!
Wing paused at the door.
I won't die, do you hear?
Patroclus' voice climbed to a screech.
Not because of you!
Thanks for everything.
Wing brushed the grime off the Buddha's head.
I'll have to get back to you.
And we'll stop there. This is Jim Kelly, and you've been listening to the Free Reads Podcast. I'll be back next week with more of my novel, Look Into the Sun.